And good evening once again, everybody. Welcome to another Hoops HD Under the Radar video podcast, the podcast where we concentrate on all the conferences that nobody else in the nation other than us is talking about. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Joining me tonight, both David Griggs and John Stalica. But before we want to go much further, we actually want to start on a pretty sad note today. Somber news, two pieces of really somber news, one of them affecting an under-the-radar school. We'll start there. We're absolutely tragic. One of the worst stories I've heard in all the years I've been a college basketball fan, when Jabri Bryan from Mercer was shot and killed yesterday. I don't know that I've heard anything worse than this in years now. Probably going back to the Oklahoma State incident.
Yeah, it was really sad, and I think it happened just late in the afternoon in the parking lot of a convenience store. I haven't really heard anything, and again, it doesn't make it any less tragic, whatever it was, on motive or reasoning. I believe there's a suspect, but that's really all we know at this point. And he had been with the program for 6 years due to a medical waiver. He was on the team that defeated Duke and made the round of 32. He was also on the team that I believe that finished first in the A-Sun the year before that. And it's just really, I don't really know what's coming out. I don't know how Mercer is moving forward, if they're going to play their next game or not, or what they're going to do to honor him. But this is, you know, teams, for better or worse, for all the drama, they really are families, and there's no way Mercer is not extremely shaken over this.
Yeah, and all we could do is send out our best wishes to the Mercer family, obviously to Brian's family, his friends. This is absolutely tragic story here. Mercer's next game is scheduled right now for coming up on this Saturday. It is going to be a home game against Citadel. I haven't heard anything yet whether or not they're going to go ahead with that game or not. Obviously, if they do go ahead with it, it's going to be a very emotional scene there down in Mercer. And as if that wasn't bad enough, we also had another tragic story coming out of Butler, our second tragic story this year from Butler after earlier incident, but now Emerson Campin, one of their assistant coaches, his 6-month-old son who had been diagnosed with Lee disease, a genetic disorder, passed away yesterday as well. Just such a sad story there also.
Yeah, and I was unaware of it until they had mentioned it, I believe, I became aware of it during that game. So, again, Butler did go ahead and play, but our thoughts and prayers are with them as well. Just, we've had better weeks. Good grief.
Let me make one correction, though. I think they said it was Monday night where Emerson Campin the fourth had passed away, but I think the team had known about it, and then Chris Holtman had told everyone in postgame after Butler had beaten Georgetown what was going on, but definitely our thoughts and prayers are with both the Mercer and the Butler communities during this very difficult time.
Yeah, and I just want to read a quote here going back to Jabri Bryan, a quote here from Bob Hoffman, the really great head coach there at Mercer. Jabri Bryan was a special young man who was a great contributor to our team and did everything that was asked of him. He was important to us in every way. I loved him and cared about him from the very first time he was on our campus. We grew to be very close over the years. Our thoughts and prayers are with his special family. And that just goes to show you how this really is a family here. And it's just absolutely tragic.
Yeah.
But on that note, we do want to, the games do go on. We do want to, this is our Under the Radar podcast. We do want to move on to discuss the games. And what we like to do here every week in our Under the Radar podcast is begin by focusing on one of our Under the Radar conferences and then go from there to discuss all of them in kind of a more or less in order. But we begin by actually redefining Under the Radar for those of you who may be joining us for the first time. David, you're back up on the screen now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it means to be Under the Radar?
Well, Under the Radar is essentially, there's two qualifiers here. One is that you are in – you it's teams that aren't in the regular multi-bid nine. So that would be the five power conferences, or the five, I guess, autonomy conferences is the better way to put it. That's the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12. And then the four other regular multi-bid leagues, which are the Big East, the Atlantic 10, the Mountain West, albeit maybe not this year, and the American Conference. So anyone that's not in those, the second qualifier is that they cannot be ranked in either the AP or coaches poll top 25.
Right. And, well, actually, there's a third qualifier as well for certain national brand schools.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And so of the 23 conferences, two teams that are top 25 right now would be Wichita State and St. Mary's, who is in the coaches poll, not the AP. Also, Gonzaga and BYU are our national brand schools, so they are not really under the radar. Everybody else in those other 23 conferences is fair game. And like I said, we do like to choose one conference to start with. And it's a conference, neither of you actually know that I was going to go with this conference, but I'll go there and throw it at both of you. The Colonial Athletic Association, we've spoken a lot about it all year, but it hasn't been our featured conference yet this season. Really does deserve it here. We are sitting here into February now with 8 out of 10 teams with a winning record overall. And these teams have just been knocking each other off one after another. UNC Wilmington and Hofstra tied at first place at 8-2. Bill and Mary and Towson at 7-3. Even James Madison still in things at 6-4. And if we look at some of the rankings here, I believe in the RPI, are they like the 7th or 8th best conference?
It's showing as number 9 on the screen, if this is correct, according to Warren Nolan's webpage.
Yeah, number 9 the RPI. We're going to have some graphics up tonight. We are using those from WarrenNolan.com, good friend of ours, hoping to actually have him on the show tomorrow. We're hoping he's a busy man, but great website, the best statistical website and layout on the net that's free anyways.
Right. And when you look at this, when you're looking at a conference that's ranked in the top 10,
yeah,
generally you're looking at a conference that is going to be in play for multiple bids, and not even what I'll call the if the champion gets upset bid, which is kind of what you might see this year for something like the Sun Belt or the Metro Atlantic, if a team like Monmouth or Little Rock gets upset in the conference tournament. But when you're talking about the 9th rated conference, this may be a conference that's top two teams are both at large worthy and would both get in. And I guess the question here is, do we have two teams that could be in that type of play, and who would they be at this point?
Well, We haven't been putting in anyone inside our bubble at least since January. John and I do brackets throughout November and December, but those are more or less just checkpoints. Going through the exercise just to get in the habit of doing it. This is sort of an anomaly, because if someone like William and Mary or even Hofstra can run away from the league, get in, I mean, what was the old qualifier? Outright first place finishers that finish in the top 60, or is it the top 50 of the RPI, almost always get in. I mean, but there's even exceptions to that. You could make a case for an outright first place finisher, but I don't know. The problem is, with as good as the records were, no one really put together a strong – everybody kind of had incidents where they shot themselves in the foot. Had William and Mary actually managed to get that win at Dayton that they almost got, I would like their chances more than anyone else. Hofstra did beat Florida State. But some of the other teams have been – Northeastern had a big win, but they've been disappointing. James Madison looked like they were going to be Robel, but they've been a little bit disappointing. So it just doesn't seem like the teams that are in first place now were the ones that really did the heavy lifting out of conference.
Well, another sign that you have a deep conference is the Northeastern team you mentioned. They're in eighth place in the conference right now. In this case, 8 out of 10 teams.
Right, but when going back to this Bill and Mary, this is really the interesting profile that I'm really looking at here. Right now, they're actually tied for third place at 7-3, a game behind Hofstra and Wilmington. But their RPI right now on Warren's site is sitting there at 37 overall. An RPI of 37 gets you a long look no matter what.
Right.
I mean, even if you don't deserve it. And then when you look a little closer at their profile, they do have four top 100 wins, albeit all four of those were in between 92 and 98 in the top 100, so barely top 100 wins.
It also helps the Tribe to play teams like Dayton, who has a not an inflated record, but certainly a very good record on their own.
Well, what I was going to say is when I'm looking at the Bill of Mary, the thing that glares out at me even more than that Dayton loss that would have been nice, it would have been great if they picked up, but they've got two bad losses, and the one is that loss at Howard, ranked 297 in the RPI. If they hadn't blown that game, I think that you're probably looking at a point or two, a few points higher in the RPI and taking a long, hard look at this team as maybe at-large worthy.
And that works against them because if nothing else, if it's – I mean, if you're looking at William and Mary as opposed to other teams on the bubble – nobody else on the bubble is going to have a loss that horrific. That is an atrocious loss.
I can't say – I'm not going to agree with you quite there. I think there are a few teams that are going to have these bad losses, and the Howard loss is a bad loss. But those teams that have those bad losses are somebody like a Monmouth that has something really good or multiple things really good.
Monmouth didn't lose to a sub-300 team. This one's pretty awful.
It is pretty awful. I got to tell you, though, I mean, we'll get to the MEAC in a little while here. Howard could be an NCAA tournament team as well. So, you know, you got to get – but, yeah, it's a horrible loss. But you can make up for that by getting the win at the top. So if they picked up the Dayton win, I would have ignored the Howard loss.
Yeah.
You lose the Howard game, you lose the Dayton game. You do have a win at NC State, which is nice. You swept Charleston team, which is nice. They do have to go to James Madison still. They've got a home game against Hofstra. They have a couple chances for a few more top 100 wins, albeit not against tournament caliber teams.
Yeah. Now, as Wofford showed last year, you can overcome losing such a horrific game because I think Citadel was the team that Wofford had lost to last year, and they still manage a 12 seed.
Well, they managed a 12 seed, but they also got it with the automatic bid. So if Wofford had lost to Furman in the SoCon championship game last year, I don't think they would have been in the field.
Yeah, that was an interesting case because we were thinking that if Wofford played their way to the championship game, they'd be all right. But we didn't anticipate them being matched up with a team as bad as Furman in the championship game. I'm not so sure they would have been all right. What was Furman's RPI? Was it around 300? It was really low.
It was really low. They finished dead last in the regular season. They were the 10th seed and made the incredible run to the SoCon championship game. And it was a close game. I believe it was a 3-point win by Wofford.
It was very close. And and I was just like, my God, if Wofford doesn't get to play. And then Wofford went on to arguably, well, should have beaten Arkansas, really, in my opinion. But,
yeah, Furman would have also had, I think, 21 or 22 losses going into the NCAA tournament, which been a record.
Yes, yeah. it was a bad Furman team. Would have been an amazing story for them, though.
Yeah.
On that note, let's go back to the top of the under the radar conferences. We start things off in the America East, go right on through to the WAC. And in the America East, following was a close game for about 25-30 minutes today. Stony Brook got challenged by Binghamton, who's 5-17 overall. Did pull away late in the game tonight, is now 9-0, one of only a handful of teams remaining undefeated in their conference in the entire country. I think we're down to only 7 or 8 of those left in the nation at the moment.
Yeah, 9-0, two-game lead on Albany and a head-to-head win at Albany. I'm going to pull up Stony Brook's profile here. We mentioned William and Mary. I think I know the answer to this, but I really like this Stony Brook team. They look at all those wins in a row that they have. I think it's like 11 or 12 now. The problem is I don't know if they've even beaten anyone that would be considered an NIT caliber team at this point.
Their best wins are home wins over Princeton and Hofstra, which are maybe NIT caliber teams.
Yeah.
But you only have 4 wins against the top 150 and all 4 were at home. That's nowhere close to what William & Mary has done.
But I think the other question is, would they be NIT teams because they win their conference but don't win their tournament?
I think Hofstra's an NIT team. I'd forgotten about that. But this Stony Brook team, could you make an argument for them if you had to? I just don't think it's going to happen, which is a shame. I'm really hoping they get it done because I've watched them play a couple times now, or more than a couple. You know, watched them tonight, but watching them all through conference play, this is a good basketball team. And this is a team that If you're a 3 seed, you should beat them, but you better not overlook them.
If they went out to the conference championship game, they'd be 24-5 against D1, little bit worse than Murray State last year, and there's not much more in this profile that's better than what Murray State did. I guess beating Princeton and Hofstra is better, a little bit better than what Murray State did last year, but as we know, Murray State really wasn't a tournament profile. We didn't think they were. I can't see Stony Brook getting an at-large.
But unlike Murray State, at least Stony Brook gave themselves a couple chances to try to get a big one. But they tried Notre Dame, they tried at Vanderbilt, but weren't able to win any of those two games.
Yeah, and then at Northeastern, you thought that was going to be a good game. And then don't forget their opener against the Merchant Marine Academy.
Yeah, three non-D1 games. If there would have been three D1 games, you could now be looking at 28 wins against D1, and that's a little...
Who's the
or 27.
I see Farmingdale State and Merchant Marine.
Oh, Merchant Marine Academy.
Yeah.
To the late, great Skip Prosser, because I think that's where...
Oh, that's right, yes.
My apologies. Yeah, two non-D1 games, yes, correct.
Okay.
Let's move over to the Atlantic Sun next, where we had one of the crazier upsets of the week over in the ASUN as Stetson went to Jacksonville and knocked off North Florida in a game that still is stunning to me. I don't know where the Stetson team came from. They are now 9-15 overall. To go down to North Florida, who had been rolling over the ASUN, and pick up the win there, I'm still kind of speechless about it, honestly.
But yeah, and Stetson had looked absolutely abysmal. I think they only had 3 or 4 total wins at the time. North Florida was rolling through the conference and all that. Now, it doesn't really drastically – it's not so cataclysmic that it changes the complexion of North Florida's season or anything like that. They're still in first. They still have a game lead, and I think they still have the head-to-head, at least currently, against Jacksonville. But –
They did win the first game against Jacksonville. The two teams will meet again in the final game of the regular season on February 25th. Jacksonville team has been surprisingly good this year. They have swept Florida Gulf Coast, and if Jacksonville wins out, including being North Florida, North Florida could end up having to play on Jacksonville's home court across town in the championship game as opposed to playing it at home.
Oh, that would be wild. Jacksonville, the Dolphins, I want to say they have some history. They've been to a Final Four, but they haven't done much recently, obviously. Man, that would be fun to see those two go at it.
Now, if they go to the ASUN Championship together, do they play that on campus, or do you think there's a chance they play that at the Veterans Memorial Arena downtown?
They're absolutely playing it on campus. Absolutely.
And they would absolutely do it, and here's the reason. If you have the right to play it on campus, why would you want to move it to a neutral site if it's your game?
Yeah.
Like, you want to give yourself every chance in the world to win that.
Let's move over to the Big Sky, where we're kind of sitting right about where we were last week with Montana and Weber State, both with only one loss in conference play. Montana with a half-game lead at 8-1 over Weber, 7-1. I really don't think I've seen anything that either one of these teams to separate from each other yet, and in the same token, I don't think anybody else in the conference is really in the same ballpark as them, and they're not going to play until the end of February.
Yeah, probably not. They're just running away from it. Both of them looking really good. I still like Montana's team a little better, but yeah, they're running away from it. And again, no stakes here because no campus sites are going to be rewarded. So
now there was an article out today, earlier this week that regarding the Big Sky having moved the conference tournament to Reno, and actually there was a pretty good reason for it. It was all as a monetary thing that it was proven to be very difficult monetarily to get the teams to the conference champion when you don't know who the conference champion is until the last day of the regular season. Some of these schools didn't have very many hotel rooms available around them. Montana does, but if you had to send a bunch of teams out to Portland State or Northern Colorado, maybe not Portland State, but you know, it was very difficult to get hotels, and if you have 8 teams, you've got to get 8. You could have some teams staying at not quite the nicest hotels. At Reno, the facility that they're at, there's 3 hotels right there. So every single team, all 12 of them, will be right there, being able to stay right there. It's there is some basis for doing this.
Yes, but you know how you don't have to worry about staying in a hotel. If you finish first, you can stay at home.
But let's move over to the Big South, where as we sit here right now, UNC Asheville with a game lead over Winthrop and Coastal Carolina. John, I think you were noting that there was some pretty wild games tonight. I think Asheville pulled out their game. High Point did not tonight, though.
Yeah, Asheville was able to survive, but it wasn't just tonight. It was also, I think, last night, where Winthrop lost on the road to Liberty. While Liberty is still in the middle of the standings by the Big South, their power ratings are still in the upper 200s, but not quite into the 300 range, so not a good game for the Fighting Kelseys.
Right, yeah, kind of surprising there. And again, we're getting back to, here we are 12, 13 games in, and we've got 1, 2, 3, 7 teams separated by 2 games. Yet another year in the Big South, yet another year that would be exciting because of home court advantage being at stake for the conference tournament. But like the Big Sky, they've decided to play it at a predetermined site where there's plenty of hotels, which is why they choose Buies Creek, North Carolina.
Well, I got to say here, the one state that's not – Coastal Carolina is no longer hosting it. This is Coastal's last year in the Big South. That's why they're not allowed to host it.
Yeah, it's Buies Creek because that's where the hotels are.
But Coastal Carolina has now run off 6 straight wins here, and they're definitely the hottest team in this conference. And maybe a team we really got to start taking a lot more serious look at, especially with High Point having kind of been disappointing the last few weeks.
Very much so. In a surprising way. Yeah, I mean, you really thought that they were going to – they were playing so well, and I thought High Point was going to run away with it, but not these past couple weeks. I'm sorry, Tim Miles is getting teed up right now. This is
all right, so while David watches Tim Miles get teed up, John, you and I are going to talk about the Big West, where David and I last week were talking about the Big West being one of the few conferences with multiple undefeated teams left in it. And then on the same exact night, Irvine loses at home to Santa Barbara. Hawaii, with a chance now to start pulling out a lead, loses at home to Long Beach. Both of them lost pretty handily at home. And so now we've got these two teams still up there, but both now sitting there with one loss. I don't know there's much that either one has shown me over the other at this point yet either, with the fact that they haven't played head-to-head yet.
Yeah, it hurts a little bit less for Hawaii since Long Beach is, what is it, third in the standings right now. But with UC Santa Barbara, they're currently in the 6-hole right now. But ask Washington, sometimes the Gauchos can be difficult to beat at times.
I'd argue you shouldn't really look at the standings as much as look at some of the numbers here. Long Beach RPI of 89, Santa Barbara 95. Those are two of the best RPIs in the conference. Santa Barbara, the fact that they're 3-4 versus Long Beach's 5-3, at this point could just be a matter of the scheduling more so than the actual quality of the team.
It was shocking, I guess it was last Saturday, to see both these teams go down the way that they did, because especially considering how well they had looked and how good they had been playing through conference play, it was kind of astounding to see not one but both of them lose at home to non-tournament teams and not even lose in close games. And it's kind of unfortunate because I think had these two teams run away from it, and they still might run away, but had they been winning out both of them, I think there was room inside the bubble for one of them. I don't think so anymore. What do you guys think?
Well, it's not. I mean, if there's room for one of them, it would have been because the bubble, as we say every year, is not as strong as in past years. But I don't think you're going to be able to get out of the Big West with one loss, even if you lose to the other team in the championship game.
Yeah, unless you're Long Beach. Like, had Long Beach finished with a winning record out of conference, I think they could have.
Well, yeah, Long Beach, the 36th strength of schedule, Hawaii, 249 strength of schedule, Irvine, 136, at least somewhat mediocre. Yeah. But we always discuss the Colonials. Let's move over to the Conference USA, which is AKA UAB and the Southland at this point, I think. Maybe you can make an argument for Middle Tennessee, but David, is there anything else here beyond UAB, even though UAB did suffer that first loss, conference loss of the season this past week at Western Kentucky?
No, one of the more noteworthy teams here is Marshall, who was just atrociously bad out of conference, and yet they get out here at 7-2. And right in there. So they've been playing noticeably better. And really, the two met on Saturday. UAB led for the whole game and ended up winning, but it wasn't without controversy. A real questionable no call at the end of the game that would have sent Marshall to the line with a chance to either tie or win with two free throws ended up, after about 27 minutes of review, they ended up giving the ball to UAB and, you know, they were just able to run out the clock. But no, it isn't. I mean, this is an extraordinary weak league this year, even by Conference USA standards. I don't think anybody could even land above the 14 line except for UAB at this point. I think everybody else is 15 or 16. If someone other than UAB wins the conference tournament,
I think maybe Middle Tennessee, if they win out all the way through the conference title game, could make a claim for the 14 seed, but that's it. Marshall, which beat Middle Tennessee, actually, right before that UAB loss. Marshall, not going to be good enough to get up. It could be a 15-line team, even, if they won the conference tournament. And remember, the conference tournament is in Birmingham, so right. Another advantage for UAB.
Yeah.
There's also some other off-the-court news for Marshall, where Chris Duhon is going to be returning after, I think it was a two-month absence because of a DUI arrest late in 2015, so we'll see how Marshall responds now that he's back on the bench with their coaching staff.
Yeah.
Let's move over to the Horizon League, where we have a team that I think all three of us would agree at this point does not look like it even needs to win the conference tournament to get into the field, and that's this Valparaiso team.
Yeah.
Has the top 50 win in Oregon State. Two questionable losses at Ball State and at Wright State, but even after that Wright State game, they've come back and won three straight games in pretty dominating fashion and should do so again this week at Illinois-Chicago, who's pathetically bad.
Pathetically bad. Here they are, 8 true road wins, RPI in the 30s, again, sub-40 outright first-place finisher. You typically go right into the field if you look at this categorically. I think Ball State, it's a game they should have won, but I think it's somewhat forgivable. The only one that's kind of a head-scratcher is Wright State. I really am surprised that they lost that, but they really should win out because this is their schedule. Illinois-Chicago, very close to the Centenary, Northern Kentucky transitional, Wright State at home, at Cleveland State, who's terrible, Oakland, who they beat already, Detroit, who isn't very good, and they're at home. The game at Milwaukee might be a little bit tricky, but there's no way that they shouldn't even sweat these games, much less lose them the rest of the way, especially when you look at how well they've been playing.
Then at Green Bay, 10 the season before the conference tournament, which they will start in the semifinals with a bye there.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say it's really strange that Wright State loses both of their games at Detroit and Oakland, while Northern Kentucky actually won both of those games, although those games were not played back-to-back.
Yeah. That's not good because the conference tournament's in Detroit. Bad news for Wright State. You're going to have to win in Detroit.
Let's take a look over to the Ivy League, where we finally got into the regular rotation of conference games this past weekend. Had a couple of really good ones, including a Yale-Princeton game that came right down to the end, as well as Columbia getting a buzzer beater over Harvard over the weekend. A couple of really great games. And maybe the game of the year in the Ivy League could be coming up on Friday night. I think our colleague Lee Delvecchio is going to be there, as Columbia will be at Yale. The only conference remaining in the nation with multiple teams undefeated in conference play. They will be matching up head-to-head Friday night. Harvard will be at Princeton. I'm actually going to be at that game, catching a couple of these other Ivy League teams on Friday.
And that's a big one, too, because, again, I know it's early, but Princeton, Columbia, Yale, right up there. Harvard was the team that I like coming in the conference play. They've been really, really.
Yeah, really Harvard. Awful. We really started looking at Harvard when they had a great performance out in Hawaii at the Diamond Head, yeah. And they've been pretty bad since then. And I think, you know, they're pretty much digging their graves at this point. But Yale, Columbia,
well, the first
Princeton.
Place team, Harvard, already with three losses. Does the first place team in this conference even lose three games? Is Harvard already out?
It could be close to it. I think yeah. three or four. I mean, I don't see it being more than four losses for the first place team. So Harvard, yeah. if they win out, may be able to get in the mix there at least.
Not dying for John T's Penn Quakers either by that scenario.
Yeah. No. Penn is not looking that good this year. You know, I was there at the game when they hosted Princeton, and they completely fell apart that game. It was absolutely. I mean, it was an amazing collapse, actually. Yeah. 0-3 right now.
A little bit better basketball when Valpo had beat Northern Kentucky a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, the North actually played 20 good minutes of basketball in the first half, but in the second half, Valpo really turned up the Jets and looked like the tournament team that we've been expecting.
Right. I know we talked about the Horizon League already, but, we mentioned this in the offseason. We haven't mentioned it all season. Firing Dave Beasold was not a good idea by Northern Kentucky. I just wanted to get that out there. Let's move on.
Well, given the two of you are going backwards, I've got to move forward here to the Metro Atlantic.
Okay,
and, noises again. You talked about first place finishers with sub-40 RPIs, first place finishers with sub-30 RPIs, and that's what we've got with Monmouth right now with the 27 RPI, yeah. Absolutely looking like a tournament team despite three sub-200 losses at the bottom of the resume.
Right.
Now, the only question I really have with Monmouth, if you look at the remaining schedule, three road games left at Marist, at Rider, at St. Peter's, the other five games that are all home games. I don't know that they're going to lose a game. I think their Iona home game will be the toughest one because that's become such a good rivalry in the Metro Atlantic. But
I think they're going to do very bad things.
They're going to do very bad things to Iona. But do they have room to lose another one of these games is really the question here. If you're going to add in there also the fact that they're a loss in the Metro Atlantic tournament.
Probably, I mean, if this is an exercise of what is the absolute most you can lose and still get in, I think it would behoove them not to. My advice to them is to not lose another game. Just my advice.
Yeah, any other loss they have before the Metro Atlantic Tournament will be a sub-150 loss. In the Metro Atlantic Tournament, if they lose and they lose to Siena, it's not going to be that awful of a loss. Siena's sitting with a 90 RPI right now.
Right.
And I think if they win the rest of the regular season, they lose to Siena, be it the finals, the semifinals, even if they play Siena in the quarterfinals, which I doubt they would do, right. I don't think that's going to be a loss that knocks them out.
And this is my opinion on this, and I said this about Iona in this conference last year, who I guess was not inside the bubble, which makes sense. But if Monmouth is inside your bubble going into the conference tournament and they lose to a team that they've already beaten twice and finished ahead of, I don't think you should penalize them because they have
and
already.
And the game is on that team's home floor.
Yeah, and that's the third level of this. You shouldn't do that no matter where the game is. You especially shouldn't do it if the game is on their home court. You shouldn't be penalized for, you know, not doing something that you've already done twice and finished ahead of that team.
And that's why it's important that Monmouth beat Siena at least once in Albany. But the way things are shaping up right now, Monmouth
did not take it until
the finals in the bracket.
Right. And that was a nice win for Monmouth. Siena hadn't lost at home all year. It's their only home loss. And they led the whole game. I mean, it was a big showcase game for Siena, and Monmouth went up there and beat them. I would hate to think that they would not – if Monmouth is inside your bubble going into the conference tournament, they should stay there, in my opinion, no matter what they do in the conference tournament.
They'll also be cheering for Siena since this is now in the top 100 of the RPI for the time being, so that could give them another quality win in some metrics.
Right.
David, last year Murray State had 24 D1 wins and did not make the NCAA tournament.
And deservedly so.
One of the highest totals of D1 wins for a team that did not that never made that failed to make the NCAA tournament. I want to bring up a situation here for you as we move over to the Mid-American Conference. The Akron Zips, if they win every single game for the rest of the season until the MAC championship game, will have 28 Division I victories.
Mm-hmm.
How can they be left out at that point?
Well, Robert Morris had 27 1 year and got left out.
We're talking 28 D1 wins for the Akron Zips, including a win at Arkansas, a top 100 win at Buffalo.
Yeah. There is a little bit of a problem here, and if you see it on the screen, I got it highlighted. 284 out of conference, that's going to work against them. But I don't know. How close are – they're not exactly close to my bubble yet. I don't see them getting there, even if they win out. But, I mean, you're talking about winning at Kent State, who's good at home. You're talking about winning at Northern Illinois, who's good at home. And you're talking about additional neutral floor wins. You can make a case for them. But, I mean, one of the things is just if they win out, they will not have beaten anyone in the top 50. I don't know. We've seen teams, I want to say we saw Davidson 1 year land on the 10 line without a top 100 win. They didn't need the large bid, but, when you land on the 10 line, it's an indication that you would have gotten it. So I guess it isn't completely nuts.
St. Mary's has no top 100, top 50 wins, and people are talking about them as a tournament team right now.
Yeah.
Winning in Arkansas, I mean, Arkansas is a lot better this year than I thought they would be even.
Yeah.
And, their losses at Green Bay, at Toledo, those are borderline top outside, just barely outside the top 150, at Central Michigan and at Villanova. Obviously, you can't expect them to win at Villanova, but it's just a ton of wins. They'd be an outright first place finisher in the Mid-American Conference. And I agree, there's a ton of what ifs. They'd have to sweep two games against Kent State still. They'd have to win at Northern Illinois. They'd have to be a Central Michigan team this weekend that's been playing really well lately. But I just want to throw it out there that I'm keeping an eye on this Akron team. I think they have a shot here.
And it's going to be a fun one.
Go ahead,
John.
I was going to say, here's the problem when you look at Akron's schedule. Cleveland State, is much worse than we expected this year. Charleston Southern, Coppin State, Bethune-Cookman, South Carolina State, Lipscomb. That's not Notre Dame's schedule. That's Akron's schedule.
I'm not defending the 10 150-plus wins that they have. But winning at Arkansas, winning at Buffalo, winning at a Marshall team we were just discussing, beating UC Santa Barbara, who we were just discussing, these are at least teams that we are mentioning, maybe not as NCAA tournament at large teams, but at teams that are near the top of their conferences, and they have beaten these teams.
Yeah,
I think what they have done at the top of their resume is a lot better than Murray State from last year.
Oh my God!
And they would have four more wins than Murray State from last year,
or Stephen F. Austin in any given year.
Right.
I like them a lot more than Murray State last year.
But if you like a team a lot more than Murray State last year, and Murray State was at least
not in my field,
was not in our field, but it was discussed a lot. There were a lot of Murray State discussions. There should be a lot of lot more accurate discussions. That's my argument.
I agree. I mean, if that's the threshold, then yes, they're better than Murray State.
Wofford
was better than Murray State, and Iona was better than Murray State, and Valpo was better than Murray State last year.
I would take it to this point that if Akron wins out, I would not be until the conference championship game. I would not be absolutely floored if you heard their name called on Selection Sunday.
Okay.
Going to date, probably.
Yeah. Okay. I agree.
Let's go over to just very quickly, the other end of the Mid-American Conference. Central Michigan has now moved into first place in the West Division over Northern Illinois. Is Northern Illinois starting to fall apart here, or is the Central Michigan team, who we liked at the end of the season, finally putting things together?
A little bit of both.
I was going to say, it's a bad, bad sign if you're losing to Miami of Ohio this year.
Okay, well, on that note, I guess, let's go over to the MEAC. Miami of Ohio, one of the Northern Illinois' three straight losses. Let's go over to the MEAC, where Hampton, sitting at 8-1 in conference, 13-8 overall, fairly respectable numbers by MEAC standards, although last night they barely got by Washington Adventist at home, so I don't know exactly what we're looking at here in the MEAC.
I just saw the score. There is kind of a good story here. We normally breeze through this in a matter of 10 seconds. We're going to spend at least 60 on it tonight. Really big shock, really big 180 when you look at how they've been playing in previous seasons. How about South Carolina State? Very surprising, 7-2, just a game out of first. This is a school that almost closed down entirely at this time last year.
Yeah, I mean, this school, yeah, we discussed it last year, that there's a chance the school wouldn't exist anymore. Not only just the sports programs, the entire university closed its doors.
It was going to close.
It almost happened, but it didn't, thankfully. And, yeah, they are off to a great start. One other piece of news out of the MEAC, Cy Alexander, who's been head coach forever, I think, did resign this week over at North Carolina A&T.
It had been forever, I think.
I believe not all at A&T. He's been at several different schools, but guy who's been around, a class act who's been around for a long time, but he has decided to hang up his hat here.
Yeah.
Over in the Missouri Valley Conference, we're not going to discuss Wichita State, who's sitting at 10-0. Evansville tonight went and lost at Northern Iowa, so I don't think we're going to be discussing them anymore either, David, are we?
No, we are not. Just a real disappointing year for Evansville. I know their record is bloated, but they really could have been and should have been better than what they were.
Let me ask you this question. If Wichita State does not get the automatic bid here, because I think that's the only way a second team gets in from the Valley, who do you think is most likely to knock them off in the conference tournament?
If I had to guess between one of the two, I would probably...
One of the nine, John. One of the nine.
I'm just going to say Southern Illinois.
Okay. I mean, you could pick Bradley if you wanted. I threw it out there for any team, but...
I think it would be Northern Iowa.
I don't have that much confidence in the Salukis, but why not?
I think Northern Iowa falls to eighth place, wins the 8-9 game, and then takes down Wichita State for their third win against what would be a top 15 Wichita State team of the year, making them the first team maybe ever to have three wins against top 15 teams and miss the NIT.
Actually, my pick here, if somebody's going to knock them off, is this was a team you liked heading into the season, David. I didn't, but watch out for the trees there at Indiana State. That they could be a very dangerous team in the MVC tournament.
Their overall body of work is abysmal, but they've been looking pretty good lately. They really have.
Yeah. Let's go to the Northeast Conference, where if we talked about how crazy things were in the Big South, we have six teams here within two games of first place. Wagner, Fairleigh Dickinson, Mount St. Mary's tied for first, but who knows? I mean, you can take the top nine teams, everybody in this conference other than Central Connecticut State, throw their name in a hat, pick one out, and that's good enough for who's going to win this conference right now by my standards.
Yeah, and it really creates for exciting drama during the season because, again, campus sites all the way through, and all those teams separated by just a couple games. The rivalries in this conference are fun. Wagner's been a lot of fun to watch this year.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Wagner get pounded at Monmouth, but obviously Alabama hasn't been a lot of teams. Another interesting thing that's going to play out during the last couple weeks of this season is that only the top eight teams qualify for the Northeast Conference tournament. Central Connecticut State clearly is not going to be in it. They're currently 351 RPI, 351 KenPom, a serious candidate for Centenary Award. But that battle for the eighth spot could be very interesting down the stretch as well.
Right. Robert Moore is normally a conference front runner, and Bryant and Long Island. I mean, these are three teams that we have seen. You know, we've seen Robert Morris and Long Island in the NCAA tournament recently. Bryant hasn't gotten there yet, but yeah, I mean, here they are just a couple games back, but they're also a couple games away from being eliminated.
And I would not be shocked if Robert Morris ends up in first place in this conference. That's how close everybody is, too.
Right.
Same parity as the Big South last year.
Yeah. Right. But, John, over in the Ohio Valley Conference, another shocking loss this past week was Belmont went and lost their first conference game at Tennessee Tech. And what this does is it puts them only half a game up on Tennessee Tech in the East Division. And the way the OVC tournament is formatted, the top two teams get byes into the semifinals, but those two teams are the two division champs, which means Belmont, if they finish tied with Tennessee Tech, and lose the tiebreaker could drop down to the 3 seed in the conference tournament, have to play an extra game.
I think shock is an overvalued word right here because Tennessee Tech is – they're only half a game behind Belmont in the standings right now, and they have respectable numbers of their own where the CIT would probably come calling this year. I mean, if Belmont wins that game, they would have quite a bit of separation between both the Eagles and also Tennessee State, but it does make the race wide open for the lead in the Ohio Valley now.
David, do you want to take up the Tennessee Tech cause, whose only top 150 win, other than the Belmont win, was a home win over 133 East Tennessee State?
I just didn't think – I realized that they were close to them in the OVC, but the OVC just seemed so far behind Belmont. I was kind of surprised. I guess I shouldn't have been because it's really hard to win them all, but Belmont just looked so much better than everybody else that – I was kind of surprised to see him fall to Tennessee Tech.
But it was still the toughest game they had remaining if they were to have any shot of running the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Tennessee State's also kind of close there, and I think they've got one more game with them as well. But let's go over to the Patriot League, where in my under-the-radar game of the night for tonight, mentioned how this American team started out the season 2-15, absolutely pathetic, had won 4 straight games, was hosting Bucknell. I kind of threw it out there as, gee, this could be an interesting story. American won the game, now won 5 straight, 5-6 in conference. The hottest 15-loss team in the entire country, by far.
Yeah, because weren't they 0-6 in conference play?
They were 0-6 in conference play. They're now 5-6 in conference play. I don't know what got into them, but wow. I mean, they may not lose a game again this season.
It's something else. Bucknell's still in first place despite the loss tonight. A team that has really slipped is one of the teams that we like coming in, and that's Navy, losers of 3 of their last 4.
Lost again at home tonight. They lost at home to American. That kind of kicked off American's run. They lost to I think it was a BU that they lost it tonight.
Boston beat them.
The other thing to watch for American now is they're just a game away from hosting. In other words, getting a top 4 seed in the
Top 4 seed. They may get. I don't know if they can get all the way up to the 1 seed. They may reach the 2 seed by the end of this season. Yeah. The way they're playing right now.
Right.
Over in the SoCon, Chattanooga still continuing to roll. Only the one loss, the kind of strange loss at Furman, who is a lot better Furman team than the Furman team we discussed from last season. They get the rematch with Furman coming up this weekend at home, so a little payback coming up here.
Right.
David, this team, especially with the win at Dayton at the top of their resume, despite 2 sub-150 losses, I think this is an at-large team if they do run the table here but lose in the conference tournament.
I agree. I really like them, and it just stinks that they lost, like, one of their best players just before the Dayton game. But, I mean, other than the Furman game, they've been winning without him, and they've been winning rather convincingly as you look at what they've done here. I want to follow up what you said. I think they're an at-large team if they win out. I don't think they are if they do not. You're talking about losing their toughest remaining game was at Mercer, and sticking just to basketball, I know what we talked about earlier, I suddenly don't – that could significantly impact Mercer. And I'm trying to think of the best way to say that it's not going to be as challenging as it may have appeared to be a week ago for them to win that game. They need to win out all their games.
I'm not sure they're an at-large team if they lose another game in the SoCon. But I could easily rank them above some of the first 4 teams and maybe some of the other teams near the bubble if they do win out and win the SoCon tournament.
I think you could be talking 11 seed line. I don't know, the 10 seed line may be too far, but I think it could be an 11 seed if they don't lose another game until the NCAA tournament, including pulling the double, the winning the conference and regular season titles. Let's go to the Southland, where I was really looking forward to a battle of undefeated teams this weekend as Houston Baptist was going to be hosting Stephen F. Austin. But Incarnate Word and I believe messed things. Oh no, sorry, it was Abilene Christian that messed things up for us last night, knocking off Houston Baptist at home, sending them to their first conference loss, which had been they'd been a great story so far until last night.
Yeah, it had been, and Houston Baptist. I wish we had the picture. They're sporting some real interesting uniforms. I pulled it up because, again, you know, we follow everybody, and on Saturday we've got all our TVs and all our computers going, and you kind of had the Houston Baptist game circled because they were in first place, and you turned it on, and it was just like, I had no idea. You sent the article out explaining it. They were throwback uniforms.
They were throwback uniforms. They wore them last year once as well. They have these.
I don't think they
have these striped shorts. I love them. I think they're great. I mean, they're just really strange looking, almost like old, like maybe almost like a Harlem Globetrotter type of of uniform. But
Yeah. But very interesting uniforms. But, yeah, been a great story, especially for a team. One of the bigger surprises, under the radar or otherwise, considering how poor they had looked coming into conference play and then just how good they've looked since it started. I mean, we weren't talking about them at all at the start of conference play.
Now, they are still in the thick of things here, one game behind Stephen F. Austin. Texas A&M Corpus Christi is a team that lost at Incarnate Word. They'd have two losses in conference play. Got to say here, look at the standings. You've got both Incarnate Word and Abilene Christian, the two transitional teams in the top six of the conference right now. Yeah. Neither one will be playing in the conference tournament, but they are definitely going to be making some noise here the rest of the way. They've Incarnate Word at 6-2 could finish even higher than fourth place.
Yeah, and again, is this the last year for both of them, Chad?
No, they both have one more year, just like Lopes.
Okay, and again, it's a 13-team conference, and I know that we all like conference or campus sites for the conference tournament, but the big consolation is the beloved quintuple header.
It's only an 8-team conference tournament that uses the ladder format. It's not going to happen.
They could change it. A quintuple header.
Transitional team on its fourth and final season this year.
Let's head over to the SWAC, where another one of the hottest teams in the nation right now, 9-0 Texas Southern, went into conference play at 1-11. Yet David, you and I are both saying that this team could win the conference despite being 1-11, and we can pat ourselves on the back for this one.
I think they will win the conference. Do they do the ultimate? Run the table and go for the double. I think they could.
I agree with you. They do have a game at Southern left on the schedule, their toughest game of the season, so we'll see what happens in that one. The other news out of the SWAC, or the other team we want to discuss out of the SWAC, is down at the bottom, where Prairie View A&M, 1-20 overall, only one D1 win, and in my opinion at least, the current front runners for the Centenary Award.
Interesting. Let's get them up here. Just give me a second.
Now, the reason I say that is Central Connecticut State, if you look at some of the rating numbers like KenPom, the RPI, is dead last in all those. But Central Connecticut does have two wins. Prairie View, only the one.
Now, Chad, we've got something here. The overall strength of schedule is 273. We like it around 300, but that's okay. Yeah. But look at this.
It'll fall. The strength of schedule will fall off as they play more SWAC teams.
Yes, 107 non-con, that's a little bit high.
It is a little high.
Yeah. I mean, for the Centenary, you just got to be the worst of the worst, but...
We have never had a Centenary winner with more than one D1 win. If we gave it to Central Connecticut, they would have two... They would be the best Centenary Award winner ever with two D1 wins.
Yeah, that win the win against Southern. No, that was. I mean, we don't like to see those top 200 wins. Centenary.
Let's go to the Summit League. And John, at the top of the Summit League has suddenly become a little bit crazy here with South Dakota State, Fort Wayne, and IUPUI tied at 7-2. Omaha right here at 7-3. What are we looking at here? Actually, Omaha was just a bad loss tonight at Western Illinois, actually.
Yeah, well,
this is the colonial of the Midwest right here, so there's going to be quite a bit of parity, and as I explained, I think on the last Under the Radar show, this is not the kind of lead that you're going to be able to run away from. but South Dakota, they still have the best non-conference slate to complement what they've done in terms of a decent body of work in the Summit League.
Not a power conference by any means, but certainly not bad at all by under-the-radar conferences. It's normally about in the middle or upper towards the top. With that being said, I've never seen this in the Summit League before, what IUPUI is doing. Generally, the teams that do well in the league did pretty well out of conference as well. It's not a situation like a Texas Southern or a MEAC or Patriot League where you see teams with only one or two out-of-conference wins. What has gotten into them? Good.
We're going to find out. Their next three games are all on the road, including it's coming up this weekend at South Dakota State. So
yeah.
They win their next three straight at Denver and at Oral Roberts in there as well. I'm going to start writing them into my field and forget about South Dakota State. And this is a team kind of like we were discussing with American or with Houston Baptist, was nowhere near our radars after the non-conference season was over.
Right. And typically, you would expect to see that in the Southland, one of the weaker leagues. I don't want to say expect, but you're not quite as surprised by it. It would be like someone coming into, like, A-10 play with a losing record and then suddenly dominating the league. You just don't normally see it. IPFW having a great season. I still like them the best. I know you like South Dakota State, but IUPUI, we're going to learn something about them in the next three games, like you said.
Based on how you guys have described them in past shows, aren't you going to need a waiver if you lose to Denver?
Probably, yeah. The one of the most under... God, you want to like... Is it Joe Scott that's the coach there?
Joe Scott is still the coach there, quite honestly. I mean, I really like Joe Scott back when he was in Air Force. Even in his short time at Princeton, he has underachieved so much at Denver, had some great teams. Not this year headed to the season, but the last 3 or 4 years, we thought that his teams would contend for the Summit League Championship, and they weren't even in the race. They were... it's been...
Well, how does he – because he is a good coach. Like, he was able to really get a lot out of his players when he was at Air Force. And then to see him go to Denver and get this kind of talent and not get it done – and when I say not get it done, I mean not get it done by Summit League under the radar standards. It's just alarmingly bad. And I like Joe Scott, too. It might be time for Denver to make a change.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in the offseason there. I mean, he has been there now – for 9 seasons, saw the move from the Sun Belt, 1 season in the WAC, and now over to the Summit League, and had a couple good seasons, 22-win season in the 1 season they were in the WAC, but they got upset in the conference tournament that year,
right.
And that was kind of the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go over to the Sun Belt. Arkansas Little Rock sitting here at 19-2 overall, a team that I think, if you're going to be putting St. Mary's into the top 25, this team should be the top 25 as well. That's how high I am on this Little Rock team.
They should be. I don't really believe them to be one of the 25 best teams, but I think that they're deserving of it if you're going to put St. Mary's in there. Their profile is much better. They've certainly, whereas St. Mary's never went on the road, this team went on the road just a little bit. They went on the road a little bit.
They won at San Diego State. They won at Tulsa. And they won at DePaul. And, you know, winning at DePaul is not very easy either.
Yeah, just
as Providence.
Yeah, like St. Mary's has not even – their record is worse. They don't have anything close to the caliber of a win like the win at San Diego State or Tulsa for that matter. Beating Gonzaga at home is not that hard this year. It's – you know, they have that tough stretch with the 4 straight road games coming up. But this is a really good team. This is a team – Monmouth has gotten a lot of national attention. Valpo, they're on our radar at least. I don't think people are valuing Valpo enough, but it's just amazing to me that no one in the media, I mean, not one person is paying any attention to Little Rock. This is a really good team.
And then there's a race for the double bye where Texas Arlington is now, I think,
out.
A couple back of
yeah, we can forget about Texas Arlington. You mentioned Little Rock, though. We have to mention it. From February 11th to February 20th, at Louisiana Monroe, at Louisiana Lafayette, at Georgia State, at Georgia Southern. It's a heck of a stretch. All four of those teams are quality opponents by Sun Belt standards, real tough places to win. None of those teams rarely ever lose at home, so that's going to be the real test. They get through that stretch still undefeated. We're still with only the one loss of conference play. I don't see how they could miss the field if something happens in the Sun Belt tournament.
Yeah, but you mentioned it with Chattanooga, Monmouth. Is this team inside the bubble? I absolutely think they should be.
I absolutely think they should be as well. We're going to get to our under-the-radar top 10s here in a little bit, and I'll be discussing just how much I think this team is inside the bubble. But I really like this team.
Yeah.
I know they don't have the quality wins that – you may see at the top of Monmouth's profile, but they don't have the bad at the bottom of the profile that Monmouth has either.
Right.
West Coast Conference, since we're not going to be discussing St. Mary's, Gonzaga, or BYU, David, do you want to talk a little Pepperdine, or should we move on?
Pepperdine, tough to beat at home. St. Mary's is in the top 25, clearly because of their big win at Pacific over the weekend, 3-point win, I think it was, trailed much of the game. Pacific has a total of 4 wins all year. 3 of them were against really bad teams by like 5 points or less. Monster win for St. Mary's, catapulting them right into the top 25. That's why they're not under the radar.
Let's move over to the most important conference that under the radars, or most specifically the most important team. Tough, disappointing week as the Lopes fell at home to Seattle University. That having been said, tomorrow night, the game of the year in the WAC, the Lopes will be traveling to New Mexico State. First place battle. This will be the under-the-radar game of the night.
Yeah.
David, how psyched are you for this game coming up tomorrow night?
Very. I'm going to start pre-gaming immediately after the show. I mean, yeah, there we go, like with the bottle. But, this one is really big. It's been kind of a historic season. I was kind of surprised because they went to UMKC, got the win. They got the big home win over Cal State Bakersfield. Seattle, a really kind of a weak team. There's no other way to nicely put that. And for them to lose, and I don't know if they just kind of let down. I don't know if they were looking ahead. I don't know if it was an off night. Had a shot at the buzzer to win it. It didn't go in. But if they get this one, how can they not get the waiver, the Lopes waiver? Petition.
We do have a petition. Unfortunately, the petition has stalled a little bit since the Seattle loss. I understand the fans are pretty disappointed there.
Yeah.
As we go into this game tomorrow night, we got to recover from that, Lopes fans. We got to get these votes out there. Right. John, have you voted? Sign the petition.
Yeah. I mean, take it to work with you, take it to the grocery, take it to the laundromat, whatever it is you're doing. DMV, if you got to get your license renewed, take the petition with you, have people sign it.
But I was also going to add, one of the pleasant surprises that we're seeing in the WAC right now is we have 3 teams in the top half of the RPI and the other power ratings. We know about Grand Canyon and New Mexico State, but let's not forget Cal State Bakersfield, who themselves is a game out of first place. I mean, if you want to talk about the witness protection program, look at the job that Rod Barnes has done in there after years of success at Ole Miss.
They've had one of the
– Rod Barnes – I'm ignorant. I didn't realize Rod Barnes was there.
Bakersfield's had a really good season this year. Did lose 2 out of 3 this past week, including the loss at Grand Canyon as well as losing home to Mexico State, but bounced back with a win at Utah Valley. Really only 2 tough games left for Bakersfield at New Mexico State in their home game against Grand Canyon towards the end of the season. So I expect Bakersfield maybe not to get the 1 seed, but the 2 seed, probably in line for the 2 seed in the conference tournament, 3 if the waiver comes through.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, we want to do a very quick preview of some upcoming games this week and then turn to the top 10 list. Starting tomorrow night, Thursday night, a couple big games in the Colonial, where William & Mary will be at Northeastern, and Hofstra will be hosting UNC Wilmington.
Yeah, big games for both Hofstra and William & Mary. Yeah. Northeastern should be good but isn't, and that's all I'll say.
And Wilmington, surprisingly, is better than we thought they would be. Actually, that Wilmington-Hofstra game will be a battle for first place. Arkansas-Little Rock will be hosting Troy tomorrow night. We mentioned the Grand Canyon at New Mexico State game. Hawaii's going to be at Santa Barbara, who just knocked off Irvine. And St. Mary's at BYU, not technically under the radar, but I think it's worth mentioning at least.
Yeah.
John, we mentioned there's some big games coming from the Ivy League Friday night, Columbia at Yale, Harvard at Princeton. Another big game, the division leaders in the Mid-American going head-to-head at 8 o'clock Friday night. Central Michigan will be at Akron.
That's a big one.
Yeah, that's going to be another one of the games that we had mentioned earlier where you would probably expect Akron to win. But Central, I think they were considered the preseason favorite in the media to win the MAC, so certainly not a game you can be overlooking by any means.
Coming up on Saturday, two of the three teams that are currently tied for first place in the Northeast, Mount St. Mary's, will be at Wagner. Although you could probably take any other game here in the Northeast Conference and call it an important game.
Right, yeah.
I bet you that Chattanooga will have that revenge game against Furman. North Florida needing to bounce back from the Stetson loss will be at Florida Gulf Coast.
That'll be fun.
That's Stephen F. Austin at Houston Baptist as the Huskies try to bounce back from their loss.
That's going to be fun. That game should be streamed. I encourage everyone to watch it. Houston Baptist plays in, you know, essentially their arena could fit in my living room. It is amazing.
Here it goes. Coming up Sunday, another big game in the Colonial Hofstra's at James Madison. And do want to mention one other game on Saturday, though. We mentioned this at the top of the show, but Mercer will be hosting the Citadel in their first game, assuming that game is going to go ahead. I haven't heard anything else yet, but that should be a very emotional situation there. But on that note, I guess we want to do our top 10 list, right, David?
Yeah.
Okay, top 10 lists under the radar. I'll run through my list here and let you both comment on it. Number one overall, I have the Arkansas Little Rock Trojans. I know two of you may not agree with that, but that's how high I am on this team right now.
I like them. I'm really high on them. I have them inside the bubble. I still have Valpo 1 and then Monmouth 2 and then Little Rock behind them at number 3.
Okay. For some reason, Tim Miles is lying down on the floor right now. But
yes, Tim Miles is lying. Oh, he's up. He's up.
Okay,
keep him down.
But, as we move on, number 2, I have Monmouth, and 3, I have Valpo. I think they're very close. Maybe there's an argument they can make that should be Valpo above Monmouth here. But I think these three teams have separated themselves from everybody else, Little Rock, Monmouth, and Valpo.
Yeah, I think so too. I think all of them are inside the bubble, and I'm assuming number 4 is right on the bubble and could end up inside it if they went out. Is number 4 Chattanooga?
Number 4 is Chattanooga. You're absolutely correct. That's the other team that I think has a real good shot at making it in. Obviously, St. Mary's is not on this list as they are no longer eligible for it. At 5 and 6, I have both Colonial teams, Hofstra, Ed William, and Mary. I don't think either one has been in the top 10 list recently, but the more I look at their profiles, I think that there's a case that can be made, maybe more so for Bill and Mary even than Hofstra, for an at-large bid if they can really dominate the rest of the way.
If one of those two runs away from the conference and dominates, I do think they'll get inside the bubble. It's just that it's such a tough league, I don't think they'll do it.
At number 7...
Tony Brook ahead of Hofstra. Probably just because of that head-to-head.
Yeah.
See, I wouldn't, because I don't think there's any way Stony Brook can get an at-large bid, whereas I think there is a way Hofstra could.
And that, I like Stony Brook, though. I like them a lot.
I like their team. I have Stony Brook a little bit lower. I have them down at number 9 on this list. In between them at 7, I have that Akron team. For the case, and I made the case for them earlier, you know, could get to that huge number of wins. They are starting to look like the best team in the Mid-American. That's why I have them at 7. I have the Lopes here at 8. They made it up to 5 before the Seattle loss. Still in my top 10 list, though. At number 10, I have UC Irvine. I think slightly above Hawaii for the best team in the Big West at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I did give an honorable mention to Hawaii and also an honorable mention to Yale over in the Ivy League.
Yeah. So, I was going to say, what about, Columbia? I'm starting to like them a little bit. They look pretty good. At least against Ivy League teams.
I think against the Ivy League teams, I don't think Columbia did as much non-conference as Yale or even Princeton did, and that's why I don't think Columbia is there. If Columbia wins both games this weekend, beating Yale and Brown, I'll reevaluate though.
Yeah.
John, anybody that you like there that I left out or that you really take exception to?
I think the only one I probably would have taken exception to would have been the Order, because I probably would have, again, valued Stony Brook a little bit higher just because of the head-to-head, and also because they're still unbeaten in their conference, even if the America East is a couple rungs below the Colonial. So.
A couple rungs. I'll tell you, John, I got to say here, I don't know that there's a team in the top eight of the Colonial that would not be undefeated against the America East right now. So that's another reason.
Of another fabulous McCronin quote where he would say, are you saying blank team
yeah.
10 no, from the East would win the 8-10?
Yeah.
On that note, let's go to any final thoughts here. David, let me start with you. Any final thoughts or comments for the evening?
My final thought is basically a question. Where would you have UAB? I wouldn't have had them in there either, but are they close?
I did seriously consider them. They probably would have been. If I gave a third honorable mention, it would have gone to UAB. I think they are that close. It's tough because they don't have the chances in Conference USA to build up anything of quality like you would on some of these Colonial teams even Grand Canyon beating New Mexico State, I think, is better quality than what UAB is going to be able to do in Conference USA.
Yeah, it is. And sort of on that note, my final thought is I really, 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 really missed the bracket buster. In fact, like when we had it, I didn't think it was enough. I thought that it should be two or three games over the course of a week instead of just one game. Because, again, these top 10 teams, they're all in the same situation. They really can't do anything to improve their profiles. The only thing they can hope for is to not blow them up. So I missed the bracket buster.
John, any final thoughts?
My final thought is I keep trying to put Grand Canyon in my top 10, but in my workbook, for some reason, I keep getting this red bar every time I type in Grand Canyon.
What is that about?
You know what? When we go off the air, I'm going to tell you how to fix that, John, so we can have Grand Canyon. Join us again tomorrow night, everybody. Actually, we're going to be doing our bracket rundown show, a slightly different format. We're going to be coming up with a consensus bracket among the Hoops HD staff, and we'll be revealing it live on during our show with nobody on the panel having known what the results are going to be other than me, and I'll just pretend or fake it or whatever. But do have a great night, everybody, and we'll talk to you again real soon.